The effort of evil to destroy metaphysical understanding. This, however, did not end completely the effort of evil to destroy science and health. There was still another conflict arising, another avenue of attack. No sooner was evil defeated in its physical effort to destroy the English language than a far more subtle attempt was waged to destroy the right understanding of science and health. Let me briefly run over for you the events that took place in Boston during the years 1918 to 1922. You remember, it was during the summer and early fall of 1918 that the most tremendous stress of the World War was being experienced. Evil was doing its utmost to push its way to victory, but the forces of good were steadily gaining, and as the fall advanced, it was clearly seen that the purpose of evil had been thwarted. Then came, in November, the armistice. As the physical efforts of evil were being thwarted, a new line of attack at science and health was coming to light. When Mrs. Eddy in 1875 gave her discovery of Christian Science to the world as Science and Health, she very positively stated in that book the evil and error of church organization. It is plain to any reader of the first edition that there was nothing further from Mrs. Eddy's thought than the idea of a church organization attaching itself to Christian Science. She stated this most emphatically. We have no need of creeds and church organizations to sustain or explain a demonstrable platform. The mistake the disciples of Jesus made to found religious organizations and church rites, if indeed they did this, was one the Master did not make. No time was lost by our Master in organizations, rites, and ceremonies, or in proselyting for certain forms of belief. Church rites and ceremonies have nothing to do with Christianity, and more than this, they draw us towards material things, hence away from spiritual truth, and all truth is spiritual. Jesus paid no homage to diplomas, to forms of church worship, or the theories of man. Forms of personal worship may not be voluntarily wrong, but involuntarily so, inasmuch as they hinder the spirit. These quotations from the first edition of Science and Health in 1875 plainly show Mrs. Eddy's aversion to church organization, and that, remember, after she had been presenting Christian Science to the world for 9 years from the date of her discovery. But Mrs. Eddy at that time had not quite learned what she later expressed as the fixedness of mortal illusions. In other words, the tenacity of evil to be always on the heels of truth. Because of the fixedness of mortal illusions, Mrs. Eddy found herself confronted with the determination on the part of her followers to have an organization. They demanded, just as of old the children of Israel demanded of Samuel, a king to reign over them, that they might be seen of men to prosper and to be great. This time, however, the king took the form of a church organization to show forth its importance and to absorb the attention of men. It is needless to trace the struggles and efforts of Mrs. Eddy to avoid this danger to the young child, to the unfolding of science and health, but the pressure became greater and greater. Finally, because she could not lead this mind to higher levels any faster than it was willing to go, she yielded to the necessity of the hour and allowed the organization to proceed. This she was forced to do in spite of the fact that she had seen the first effort to organize Christian Science fail and fall by the wayside. She saw clearly the utter futility at that time of attempting further to stand against the tide of materialism, determined to have a church organization. Hoping against hope, she strove to guide it as wisely as possible. The church was organized and a board of directors appointed with power to appoint their successors in office under a deed of trust. It was only a few years, however, before Mrs. Eddy realized that ecclesiasticism under any designation is the same always, greedy and tyrannical. She saw that if it was not curbed, it would strangle the very spirit it could of the young child. In 1898, as you know, she attempted to curb this despotism of ecclesiasticism through another deed of trust, creating a board of trustees. This also she made a self-perpetuating body and gave to it authority over all Christian Science literature apart from her own writings. The absolute authority which she gave to this board was summed up in her own statement in the deed of trust, in which she said, "Upon their own responsibility and without consulting me." Perhaps no stronger evidence of Mrs. Eddy's purpose to try to curb this ecclesiastical despotism that she saw ready to devour her child could be given than she gave in the deed of trust, constituting the Board of Trustees of the Christian Science Publishing Society. This was also further emphasized in the first of the three rules she wrote by hand for the trustees when she appointed them. She considered these rules of such vital importance that she had them delivered by a special messenger from Pleasant View. The first rule read, "When Mother foils a demon scheme, do not mar her success. The hardest battle is the last one." What could more significantly express her deep desire and purpose than this rule? All she asked of the trustees was to be true to their trust, and then mind would take care of the hardest battle, the last one. But could the evil of ecclesiasticism be thus constrained? It must sooner or later show itself for just what it is in order for all to see and reject it. From 1898 to December 1910, under Mrs. Eddy's authority and control, the two boards appeared to operate harmoniously. But with the departure of Mrs. Eddy in December 1910, there soon arose the determination of ecclesiasticism to express its nature, to seize everything for itself, and to be the only law. This, remember, has nothing to do with person. It is ecclesiasticism now and always. Just as the period of time from 1870 to 1914 was the developing time of that abnormal political arrogance and conceit that finally threw Germany into the arms of evil to do its bidding, so the years 1910 to 1918 were doing exactly the same thing with the ecclesiastical board of the Christian Science Movement, or what appeared to be the Christian Science Movement. Evil was rapidly preparing the way for its final effort to overthrow the young child by an ecclesiastical body as the authority, intervening between principle and its idea. In other words, something that could have the power to define what the Christian Scientist must do and think. To accomplish this purpose, a nullification of the deeds of trust constituting the Board of Trustees had to be brought about. The trustees must be compelled to surrender their authority under their deed of trust and so become hirelings of the ecclesiastical body, and therefore powerless to stop further the attempts of that body to intervene as authority between God and man. It is not necessary to go into the record of all this, for it has been fully published to the world in the complete account of the court proceedings, in which it ultimated in Boston. The stand of the trustees was stated in a few words. They stood for the inalienable right of the individual Christian Scientist to be directly governed by his divine principle, without the slightest interference from a so-called ecclesiastical intermediary or authority. The exact opposite of this was the position of the directors. As the conflict in Boston for the maintenance of man's inherent right to commune with God and be governed by God directly without any intermediary grew, so Evil's declaration of its so-called plan of church government and assumption of the right to dictate and control also grew. With this final conflict coming to the front, the conflict going on in the so-called physical world as the World War began rapidly to draw to its close. It is very interesting metaphysically to notice that just in proportion to the forward steps taken by the trustees to maintain and uphold the democracy of mind or Christian Science against the autocracy of evil or ecclesiastical domination, the conflict in Europe drew to its end. When the trustees were wholly ready to protect their democracy, the conflict in Europe ceased in what was called the Armistice. The Armistice was really only the name given to the change that was taking place in the conflict between evil and good, from the physical to the purely mental realm.